That's all been a struggle.
Paper specifically, too. What sucks is I can correct other people's paper, it's fine. Mm-hmm. When I'm writing my own paper, it's like all like rules just go out the window. It's like, I forget.
Pretty much. Hi, Dr. Goodman.
Hey. Hi, Mel.
Hello, Mel just came in.
Hi, Taylor. So we'll wait hey, Anthony.
Hey, Dr. Goodman.
Wait for Holly.
So I might as well just talk briefly about the email I sent out last time. All of the previously coded transcripts should be accounted for now. I'm still going to do checking on my back end to make sure we don't repeat, but I believe that we should be good, so don't worry about the transcripts moving forward. And sorry for the confusion.
Yeah, I'm gonna address that.
Okay.
That's on my list. Oh, Holly's here now. Okay.
Yes,
so, hello. Anyone else I'm missing? We got everybody? Eli isn't here yet. Yeah, we're waiting for Eli. Okay. Does anybody know whether Kayla is going to join us again this week, or that was just a one-off thing? Can't hear you, Jeremy.
I think it might have been a one-off thing.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I think so too.
She wasn't sufficiently impressed with us.
I wouldn't say that. I think she was just dipping her toes.
Yeah, okay. It was too cold for her.
Yeah, it was too cold.
Holly and Taylor, have you seen your colleague Eli today?
That would be Brian's colleague.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I don't know.
Sorry, Brian. Was he in class today?
I mean, I think so. I gotta be honest. I have it on speaker view, so I don't see everyone.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
I don't know if he's under the impression that because last time him and I didn't have to show up, that this time he wouldn't have to, but maybe I'll
play
or something.
That's a very good point. I forgot that. Yes. That might be the case. So thank you for texting him, Taylor.
Yeah, no problem.
So I'm just going to go ahead. So Brian and I think we've identified what the problem was with the transcripts. And the problem rests with me. I am the problem. What happened is that, Anthony, I don't remember when I met you. When did I meet you? When did you first contact me and you started working on the transcripts with Otter?
I gotta be honest with you. I don't remember the exact time either. Maybe late May or mid-June, something like that.
Okay. So post-pandemic, definitely.
Yeah, definitely post-pandemic.
And I think post-semester as well.
Probably.
Yeah. So Anthony contacted me and he wanted to get some research experience. He's interested in applying for grad schools in clinical psych, and I was excited to work with him. And so I had a bunch of transcript or a bunch of videos that needed to be transcribed. And as Taylor and Holly will attest, the transcribing of those videos takes forever. If you think it's difficult transcribing now with transcriptions that are in front of you, imagine transcribing from the video. It took an enormous amount of time, and I was looking for any shortcuts I could find. And I don't think it was you, Anthony, but somebody recommended Otter to me. I don't think it was you. Am I right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, somebody else said it. I think it was Taylor, actually. Yes, Taylor did. Back in the spring semester, she had found Otter, and then Eli had, I think, started with Otter, and then I had him do a different project, though, in another program called DeepL, in which he had a bunch of transcripts, psychotherapy transcripts in German, translated into English, and I think I had Brian look over one or two of them to make sure that they were codable. That's a different project, but... Hi, Eli.
Hi, Professor Goodman. I'm so sorry. I didn't realize Taylor and I were supposed to...
Yeah, that's my fault. Don't worry about it.
My only issue is I scheduled a patient meeting at 5.
Okay.
Is it okay if... Should we be here consistently every week now?
No, 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 no. I just wanted to make an announcement.
Okay, so I could stay on for the next...
Yeah, that's fine. I was just... taking responsibility for the problem that arose this week regarding the transcriptions. And I was just giving a little bit of a context for people how the problem occurred. I was saying that Anthony was transcribing the videos using a program called Otter. And so what I did was, I put all the videos I had into a file, and I sent Anthony the link to have them uploaded to Otter, and then Otter would create transcriptions. When I did that, I didn't think about the fact that Taylor and Holly and a few other people had already transcribed some of these videos originally, you know, manually from the video. And so what Anthony got was the entire set of videos. And so he went ahead, you know, and he, you know, put them all through Otter, and he got back 92 or 95 transcripts or whatever it was. And I didn't think twice about doing that. What I should have done was given him only the videos that had not been transcribed by Taylor Holly et al. For him to put through Otter. So that was the mistake. So when I figured that out, I contacted Brian. He reviewed all the folders with all the Otter transcripts in them, and he pulled or deleted the Otter transcripts that we already know have been transcribed and coded from last semester. So I don't think this problem should arise again, but I did want to halt any future coding as soon as possible after I figured out what was going on, so that you wouldn't be involved in coding a transcript that had already been coded. And unfortunately, Brian, unbeknownst to him, had recoded a transcript that had already been coded, ironically, by him, and he didn't recognize the transcript, but I did, because when he sent me his ratings, I then, you know, dutifully put them into the SPSS file where I'm keeping everything, the master database. And of course, you can't have two variables with the same label placed in SPSS. So when SPSS rejected it, I thought, geez, this is strange. Why would it reject this distribution, this rating distribution that Brian sent me? And so then I looked back at the the previous ID numbers that had been coded, and lo and behold, there was an identical ID number to the one that Brian had sent me. And then I knew there was a problem. I didn't know how massive the problem was. It turned out to be a very massive problem. I thought it might be just a case of Brian mislabeling his file, and maybe, you know, had one number, you know, mislabeled or something, but it turned out that wasn't the case. He had labeled his QSort perfectly. It was a much larger, more systemic problem that actually originated with me back in May or whenever I met Anthony. So that's what happened, and I apologize for that. And so we're going to resume coding now with transcripts that we know have never been coded before. And similarly with our code, with our transcribers, we will be transcribing, or we will be correcting transcriptions from Otter that have never been coded before. So we're not reinventing the wheel here and just continuing with work that's already been completed back last spring. So that's my announcement. And Eli, you're welcome to leave now. And Taylor, you can leave too, actually. So I wanted to make that clear to everybody, okay?
Thank you. I'm going to stay in because I have nothing else that I really want to do right now. And I need something to like take my mind off of something. So I'm just going to sit here and listen.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. And you know, Brian
if
is...
That doesn't mean rock bottom. I don't know what does.
Well, you know, Brian... is helping actually train, and it'd be great if you could help too and just chime in on any questions that come up, because that's basically what I'm doing. We're going to be discussing the PQS items and fielding any questions that arise, so I could use all the help I can get.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. So, bye, Eli. No problems. And actually, I have to do at 5 o'clock exactly. I have to take 30 seconds out to do something, and then I'll be back in 30 seconds. But I just want to let people know that as well. So without further ado, I am going to share my screen and put up the PQS items again this week. And so the assignment for this week for the ones in training was to really do a very careful review of the items and pick out ones that you have questions about. So that's what we're doing this week. And next week, you're going to be getting your first practice transcript to code using the Trello PQS board that's in your Trello account, in my Trello account, actually. So this is the last week that you won't be Q-sorting, but I did want you to have an opportunity to ask questions about the items. So let me share my screen.
So we're not going to be Q-sorting a transcript for next week. We're going to get a transcript assigned to next week.
No, you're getting a transcript assigned later today.
Oh, gotcha.
And it'll be due next week, and I would prefer if it came in Tuesday night so that I have time to add it to my database and check it. But you know, Wednesday night is also a possibility, but I prefer Tuesday.
No problem.
Okay. So I have the items in front of me, and I'll put on my spectacles so I can read them. So I am going to now take 30 seconds and I will be back. All right. So just give me a minute here, 30 seconds. Let me stop sharing for a minute. Okay, there we go. Okay, can everybody see that? All right. So, who has questions for me? And Brian and Taylor. Did people remember the assignment for today?
Yeah, I actually have some questions.
Great.
So, let's see. My first question was, so for item, actually, which one should I ask? Okay, so for item 28, the accuracy of the therapist accurately perceives the therapeutic process. I'm wondering, how would the accuracy of the therapeutic process be discerned? Is this going to be based on the patient's reaction, an indication that the therapist understands, or based on our own judgments? How is that discerned, if you know what I'm saying?
Well, it says this should be inferred from therapist comments, interventions, or general stance toward the patient. So let's say the patient's talking about, the loss of a parent. And they're going on and on about the loss of the parent. And the patient says, you know, you sound really angry. Do you think the therapist is accurately perceiving the therapeutic process? That's not a rhetorical question.
No, I'm trying to hear you because nobody in my house will be quiet. So.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, can you say that one more time?
Yeah, so let's say a patient is talking about the loss of a parent and they're crying and they look very sad, and the therapist says, you know, you seem really angry to me.
Okay.
Is that the therapist accurately perceiving the therapeutic process?
No.
So therapist appears in some manner to misperceive the patient's emotional state, the intent of his or her speech, the nature of the interaction between them, or to misformulate the problem. So misformulating the problem is, you know, like, so it sounds like what you're telling me is that you're very upset at your job.
Right.
The patient was talking about the loss of their parent, and the therapist says, you know, you seem like you're upset because you lost your job. What? You know, it's not accurately. I mean, these are kind of ridiculous examples, but they go on to greater or lesser extent in real live therapy sessions. So that's what this item is intended to assess.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
I have a question about item number 37.
All right.
I just wanted to ask another question on that same item.
Oh, 28?
Okay. A neutral, if we were to rate that as like a 4, are we like saying like, yeah, the therapist is like half the time getting it right and capturing what the patient's trying to say, and half the time they're not? Or just that, again, going back to salience, in that nothing sticks out looking back at the session that confirms or denies?
Yeah, I think it's not so much frequency. I mean, this is a question that Mel had asked last week. It's not so much frequency as it is salience. So how important is it that the therapist is misperceiving, or how's it phrased? You know, yeah, not accurately perceiving the therapeutic process. How salient is that to the session? You know, the therapist might misunderstand something the patient says, like I have to use the bathroom now, and the therapist misperceives that as the patient needing a tissue. So he or she offers a tissue to the patient, and the patient says, no, I need to go to the bathroom. Oh, okay. I mean, that's probably pretty inconsequential, so I would still rate that as uncharacteristic, as long as the therapist was accurately perceiving the rest of the session. I mean, I would rate that as characteristic. Sorry. As long as that one instance was kind of inconsequential, right? But it could be something, one time misperception of patient crying about the loss of a parent, and the therapist says, "You seem angry to me." That seems like a big deal. It might have happened only one time, but I would rate that uncharacteristic because it's so salient. So it's not so much frequency as it is salience, meaning the importance or the meaning to the session overall.
Yeah, so just to be clear, like, if it does happen a lot and it means a lot to the session, even if it's like one off here and there, but it's a very important part of the session, then still count it as characteristic. Salience doesn't mean just one big moment. It means important throughout the session. I just want to make that clear.
Thank you, Brian. Very important point.
Follow-up question, because there's a couple of items that also fit like the same mold, but where it seems like you can argue frequency. Would there be an instance where you would put it in the middle? Because it seems like it either falls in yes or no.
Can you give me an example?
Like when, for that, like we can do that item. Is there an instance where it would fall like at a 5 for
28? Sure, let's say there are a couple of two or three examples of the patient, of the therapist just not really getting it, but they don't seem to derail the session or the therapy process that much. So it's not a dichotomous variable. It's a continuum. It's a scale of salience. Well, it's a scale of salience either way, and then in the middle, you could say it's neither salient nor unsalient. Neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic. I mean, you can think of a therapist who sometimes misperceives and sometimes doesn't, and they would go kind of in the middle. So they would be neither characteristic nor uncharacteristic of this particular item. Does that help?
Yeah, that helps.
Okay. Is that the Last Supper in the background?
Yes, it is.
Okay. It's making me hungry. I haven't had that much to eat today. I've been too busy. But what other questions do we have? Mel, you had a question.
Yes. Can you go to item number 37?
Yes. Therapist behaves in a teacher-like manner.
Is that saying, like, the therapist is, like, condescending or talking down to the patient? Or is that saying, like, no, there's none of that sort of judgment. It's just that the therapist is teaching the patient something.
Yes, that's a good question. This item has nothing to do with condescension. I think there's a different item that covers that. This is a standard practice for a particular type of treatment model. I'll just say right off the bat that CBT therapists do this all the time. What they're doing is they're teaching skills, and so this is a bread and butter item for a CBT therapist. Doesn't mean that psychodynamic therapists don't fall into this and do this. Or it doesn't mean that CBT therapists don't not do it sometimes. Sometimes CBT therapists don't act didactically. And sometimes PDT therapists do act didactically. So I don't want you to think that it must conform to a particular therapist's theoretical orientation. But in general, this is something that most CBT therapists would say is part of their repertoire of interventions.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I understand it differently now.
Yeah, okay. That's exactly the kind of question that I want, so that when you do use these items this week to code your first transcript, you know exactly how to place the items because you know what they mean.
Okay.
13.
Okay. Patient is animated or excited. Well, obviously, because we're working with transcripts, it's not going to be a behavioral display unless the transcriber puts something in there, like patient, you know, hops up and down, in you know, it gets out of his seat and hops up and down. Then that would be a behavioral display that you'd be aware of because the transcriber made you aware of it. And I think, you know, Anthony's made it clear, and I've made it clear that when you guys are transcribing, that you will include, you know, extreme behavioral outbursts like that in parentheses or brackets, actually, when that happens. So you might have some indication of that, but clearly, directly expresses, that's talking about verbally. So the patient verbalizes their animation and excitement.
Okay, thank you.
Right, so, damn, I got that job. I'm so excited about it. You know, then you tend to put that in a more characteristic pile. Or, uncharacteristic, patient appears bored, dull, lifeless. That can also come out in their verbal, expressions like, so, how was your week? It's okay, nothing special. What do you want to work on today? I don't know. Feeling okay. That's kind of bored, dull, or lifeless. I mean, I'm using kind of extreme examples to give you a sense, but in real life, it might be a little bit more subtle, but that's how I'm interpreting this item anyway.
Well, thank you. That's really helpful.
Okay. What other items puzzled you all?
So I know we went over this one, but I just would appreciate further clarification. I think it's number 28. I'm sorry, not 28, 24. I just would like, if we could just do an example on coding placement on therapists' emotional conflicts intruding into the relationship.
Okay.
Me today in supervision.
Okay, go ahead. Go for it.
So the client I had a very emotional response to the session that we were having, which wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but it also gave me an emotional response, almost like guilt. So there were points during the session where I tried to alleviate, like, her feelings to alleviate my guilt over it, if that makes sense. So, like, because I felt bad about what was going on in the session, that interfered, or at least intruded into the relationship and the conflict in the session.
So what... can you share what you said that would indicate to a coder that your emotional conflict intruded?
So she was, like, repeatedly saying, like, I'm crazy, like, I might be crazy. I'm like, no, you're not crazy. You're not crazy like that. And it was kind of because I wanted to alleviate her guilt and feelings over that, because I was feeling guilty that she was saying those things.
Yeah, no, I understand. I don't think that, like, would tell me that your emotional conflicts intruded into the relationship. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but how would I know?
Or this sounds like, this sounds like a lot. I'm just thinking of other examples. This isn't necessarily the session, because I agree that this one is a little harder to decode on the transcripts. So something like if the patient said something like insensitive, and like we were just talking about this in Keith's class, like if you said something like anti-Semitic, the patient said something anti-Semitic, and you know, you're Jewish, and you're like, late or something like that, and then like the rest of the session is very tension filled. It's just like, oh, like, let's, you know, like, do you think of like me like this? And, you know, kind of repeated things like that, where it's clear that what had happened and the emotions are getting it. Again, it is hard to say without seeing it, but that's kind of the way I've always interpreted this card. I hope that helped.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to get personal here, Holly, how would you feel if a patient said to you, I hate Jews? How would you react to that?
No, I obviously wouldn't like it, but I don't know. It's just hard to say, like, something I would say, like, I guess that would indicate that, that like, my emotional conflicts.
Well, might you say something that you would regret, given that set of circumstances? Or might you say something untherapeutic? Let's put it that way.
Okay. All right. I see what you're getting at.
Like, I mean, a patient could so get under your skin that you could conceive, I'm not just you, I mean, I'm saying you, plural you, like me, could say, like, fuck you. Would that be my own emotional conflicts intruding into the relationship?
Right, okay.
Right? Yes, and the therapist throws them up against the wall, right?
Yeah, the choking scene.
Yes.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
That would this item would be a 9, if you were coding that session with Matt Damon and Robin Williams. Great movie, by the way. Does that help, Holly?
Yeah. I remember this was in the other coding system too, and I hated this one.
I mean, the examples that Jeremy and I just gave are pretty extreme. In the one case, you say "fuck you" to a patient. You know, it's a rather extreme response. In the other example, you know, the therapist is actually choking the patient. These are extreme examples, but emotional conflicts can intrude that are less obvious, and you just have to be on the lookout for them.
Yeah.
It's a good point. If in the session, because we're only coding the session, we're not coding the treatment. We're taking each session as a one-off. At least that's the mindset we should have. Has the therapist been doing that all along? You know, been didactic, and you know, there's the other item about being teacher-like. Or does the therapist suddenly become didactic because the patient just said that? And if so, it would suggest that the therapist has been thrown off model. That's how I would put it, being thrown off model. Their model being, don't be didactic. And now suddenly at minute, you know, 39 of the session, suddenly they become didactic right after the patient makes this anti-Semitic remark. Then you would wonder, okay, I think the therapist's emotional conflict is intruding a little bit on their the style of their interventions. And then I would tend to put it in a characteristic pile, because it is intruding on what they do on what they're doing with the patient. Does that help? That's a good one, because it's more subtle. On the other hand, you don't want to read too much into very subtle things. You know, if there's one thing I've expressed during this training so far, is that you don't want to read so far underneath the surface that your interpretation of what's going on is idiosyncratic, meaning no one else would share it. It has to stay somewhat on the manifest level in order for you to establish inter-rater reliability with everybody else in the group. Because if you're looking at these esoteric kinds of interpretations of what's going on, it's less likely that your esoteric interpretations are going to be shared by the rest of the group. So we do, in general, want to keep more to the surface than we might if we were doing clinical work, if that makes any sense. So you want the example, the illustration to be somewhat resonant, and you want to think to yourself, geez, you know, this is something that probably other people are going to also pick up on. If you think it's something that only you might be picking up on, I would tend to disregard it. Does that make sense?
That's a good point, yeah. It's probably like an inference, or it's a you thing.
Yeah, it could be your own countertransference to the material. And you're reading into it based on your own past history and experiences. And that's not going to be helpful when you're trying to establish inter-rater reliability with the rest of your group. So in a sense, we want to actually be going for the herd mentality here.
Conformist mentality.
Yes, sort of.
We want to take a road most.
Yes. Right. The road most traveled. I like that. On the other hand, I know in the past when I've trained people, people will sometimes code on the basis of what they think someone else is going to do. And they're focused so much on what others might be thinking that they actually lose the thread, and they end up not being very reliable because they're so much focused on what others how others might be placing an item that they actually don't become very reliable. So you want to guard against that too. I think there was something in the chat. Oh, might be hard. Oh, okay. Right. So this is a good discussion. This is exactly what I envisioned for today. So thank you. What other items do people want to talk about? Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
My question is like a range of, it involves a range of things like items 30, 35, 96, all the questions that involve topics like discussion centers around cognition, self-image, fees, dreams. So I'm wondering, I guess we'll use item 30. We could use item 30 as like an example.
Okay.
So I'm wondering, does uncharacteristic indicate that there is an appropriate but missed opportunity, and neutral suggests that there was really no opportunity?
Yeah, so this would fall under that general category that I've been sharing with you. You guys got I sent out the code book, right, that... Amanda Oliva had created. Everybody has that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, good. So for a lot of these items, and this was one of those, Holly, we would code this in a strongly uncharacteristic direction if there are opportunities to discuss ideas and belief systems and the therapist doesn't take the patient up on that. That would be like a one or a two. Otherwise, if it just isn't an issue in that session, cognitive themes they just don't come up. It would be more a neutral pile, 4 through 6.
Okay, so just wanted to check, thank you.
Sure. What other items?
I wrote down item 56, but I'm not sure why I wrote it down.
All right. Patient discusses experiences as if distant from his or her feelings. Neutral if affect and import are apparent but modulated. And then uncharacteristic if there's sharp affect, outbursts of emotion, deeply felt concerned. So this is like
if the patient is like retelling something that could have been very emotional, but they have almost like a flat affect to be characteristic?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So let's say talking about the loss of a father. Mm-hmm. So yes, my father died 2 weeks ago, and you know, we're making funeral arrangements now, and I think everyone's doing quite well. I know I'm doing quite well. No problems around that. Thank you for asking.
Okay. This would be like, who's in class? Shirley's mom, when she talked about the grandmother dying, and she was like, oh, it's an inconvenience because now I have to find babysitters.
Exactly.
And it was like her mother who died.
She would get a 9 for this item. Right.
Okay. Exactly.
Exactly. Thank you for bringing that up from class. That's a nice example. Does that help you with this?
Yeah.
Everyone else understand this item? All right. What other items might you want to talk about?
So we touched on this over the last few. It's not a specific item question, but just curious if there's any kinds of like common errors that you guys find yourselves falling into, or Dr. Goodman, you observe repeatedly since 2008 or whatever you said you started?
Yeah, it's been that long, believe it or not. Although it hasn't been continuous, and I've worked with other Q sorts in addition to this one, CPQ, CCQ, the ACQ or the CAQ, sorry. I mean, all these Q sorts have similarities. I think the number one error that people make, especially rookies, is that when they actually perform the Q sorting itself and they're moving the items around, they focus only on the label. And they neglect to read the descriptions under the label. If you don't read the descriptions under the label, you're screwing yourself, because that's where the meat is. That's what will help guide you where to place the item. This is what's going to help you. And if you ignore reading the descriptions underneath the item labels, you're basically waving the white flag and just saying, you know something, I don't care about establishing inter-rater reliability with my colleagues. So I think that's the number one error. Brian, what do you have to say about it? What do you think?
I have a few comments, if that's okay.
Yeah, please. Holly is a veteran of the CPQ. Taylor, you were...
That's Taylor.
Yeah, Taylor, sorry.
I'm a veteran of the CCQ and the C... What's the other one?
CPQ.
Yeah.
And so is Taylor, right?
Yes.
And the CAQ. And the CAQ, right.
So something just going along with what Dr. Goodman just said is knowing when to put something middle versus uncharacteristic. So sometimes just because it doesn't apply doesn't mean that it's automatically a no characteristic pile. It might be a neutral pile. So reading the descriptions is a big one. Another big one that I would suggest is, this is something that Goodman has said multiple times, but just a reminder, you're thinking of this one session. You're not thinking about anything that you know about this therapist. Not that you guys do, but, or this patient, but from coding, it could be I mean, from transcribing, it could be easy to think, oh, I remember that one time where she was talking about her weight gain, and yeah, I know she has issues with her weight and her body image, so let me put this high. We are focusing on that session in front of you. That's a big one. And I had another quick thing. Oh, and this is very important, that every single time you do a new one, put everything in unsorted. And I typically go from like 1 to 9 to 2 to 8, just to mix everything up so I know that it's really scattered in the unsorted pile. But every time you start over, go to unsorted, because it's easy to see something in a 7 and think, oh, that kind of makes sense, let me keep it here. But you want to start with a fresh slate every single time. And I'll try to think of other...
What do you mean by that? Start unsorting it?
Do you mind if I share my screen really quick?
No, go ahead. Let me stop my share. Taylor, by the way, these are superb points that you're bringing up. Thank you for doing that.
No problem. You guys see this?
Yeah.
Okay. So in my PQF, you see that I have everything in all 9 piles.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is now, before I code my new transcriptions this week, what I'm going to do, I'm going to take this, see the 3 dots,
mm-hmm.
move all cards in this list, and press unsorted. I'm going to go to 1. I mean, you don't have to be as annoying as this is, but you want to try to mix it up. So now when I do my next video for next week, everything is in the unsorted pile. So instead of doing it all, let me just show you. So we have piles 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then this. This unsorted pile. So now when I'm reading the new transcript, I'm looking only at this unsorted pile and then moving things around. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And before, I just wanted to add, before you stop sharing screen, I just wanted to know if there's anything else to this Trello process other than click, drag, drop to cards. Is there any other features we should know?
Well, should I explain the J sorting part?
Oh, I
don't think he knows about that.
Okay.
I think I ran through that privately with Dr. Gooman at a meeting a couple
weeks
ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, I could even show you that separately, unless we want time for just a second.
I mean, you could show them right now. That's fine.
Okay. Let me just quickly go to another old. I'll go to.
You could probably go to mind board.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll go to Brian's board. So, well, that doesn't help because nothing's sorted. Sorry, Brian, that was really rude. But
no, I didn't realize I sorted everything. I thought that everything was in there. Never mind. I apologize.
It's okay. You can only do the export if everything's sorted. So,
everything might be sorted on mine because I did a practice one time, but
I think I have mine, I guess I got rid of things. Okay. Let me just, Brian, can I do your supervision one?
Yeah, sure. It doesn't matter to me. I guess I have both reports.
Yeah, because you have one for supervision, I believe, and one for lab. Okay, so this is same idea. So this is how we do it. This is the board, and everything's sorted in the 5, 8, 12, 16, 18, and then descending. So now everything has to be card counted, and now what you would press is show menu. Then you press more, and then print and export. And then export to JSON. Now, we're going to wait a second for the thing to stop turning because it takes a second for it to all load. So let's wait for this to load. Right, maybe I'm just being ridiculous. Okay, so now what we would do is we do the command all. Do you have a Mac? Like the command all, command copy, command B.
Yeah. Or you could just copy and paste.
You can do that. I find this easier.
That's what I do, but.
And yeah. Then do you have the link to this sort tool?
Yes.
So then you would open up this sort tool. So now we commanded all, we did all and then command copy. And now in the JSON input, you paste it. So. And then it's going to show this crazy big thing, and it's going to look like a lot of gibberish, right? So then you press compile. And voila, it gives you this output. And this output is in order of, so first, the first item is in file 1, the second is in file 7. So now what you would do is copy this output, and then you would, can I show my whole desktop? Is that what I was doing? Okay, whatever. So now you go into Excel, and you open up an Excel document. Following?
Yes.
And all you gotta do is now paste again. And see all 100 items go from 1 to 100, and they fill it in. And now simply what I would do is I would do file, save as, and I would do TP my initials, PQS, and then the session. So let's say it's November 7th, 2017. And then I save that and send it to Dr. Goodman, just like that.
Perfect.
Thank you.
No problem. I don't think there's anything else.
No, I think that's it. Then I take the distribution and I'm going to correlate it with the gold standard for that particular session. And then we're going to see how everybody did. But, you know, to improve your chances of doing well, it's important to understand the items as well as possible and then to ask more general questions like you just did, Anthony. And then you know, people like Taylor can answer them and add to it. So everything Taylor said was perfect. What other questions do we have either about the instrument itself or about the coding process?
What does it look like for getting reliable and beating this coding thing?
You mean what's the goal or?
What does it look like to get like past training to be like, all right, your PALIC status.
PALIC status is a tough one to get, but yeah. You don't want to be over a 0.7 because that means you're at least 78% reliable.
Point seven is the goal. So your to be technical, your intra class correlation has to be above 0.7 with the gold standard. And I usually like to see that over several iterations, not just one-time deal. Anybody can luck out, but if you're consistent with that 0.7, then you're ready to be considered certified, a certified coder. You could actually put that on your CV too. It's everything but an actual certificate. I don't have a certificate for you, but what other questions do we have? All right, well, barring any further questions, I will send everybody out the first transcript, And I'll do that, Brian. No prob, no worries with that. And then Brian will continue to distribute the transcripts, the Otter transcripts for the current coders, the trained coders, and I guess for those of you who are doing the transcription corrections, you already have what's in your folders, and I think Brian just took a bunch out, so it should look a lot lighter, a much lighter load. So what
we're gonna be honest, most people didn't have a lighter load, so don't expect much difference.
Okay.
Most of them were coded already, but
don't want to raise expectations. So forget that. But you know, from here on out until the holidays, most likely, you know, you'll be working on your transcription corrections and then be responsible for coding one session. I'm not going to give anybody more than one session to code per week, at least until we finish the transcription correction, which, Anthony, if you could, for next week, tell me where we're at with that, how many left and so forth, that would be great. Or Brian, who's doing that? Who's keeping tabs?
I feel like we're splitting it at this point. I can do it. That's not a problem.
Okay. Yeah, one of you, just give us an update about what's left.
Okay. I'll do a count.
All right, thanks. Anything else?
And you want the coding by Tuesday night, so that should take the priority before the transcriptions?
Yeah, I mean, you have 6 hours. This meeting is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 5 hours, and you'll just have to manage where you spend your time. But yeah, this definitely has to get done by Tuesday or at the latest Wednesday night.
Okay.
So I would probably focus on the queue sorting first, because you don't really know how long that's going to take you because you've never done it before, and then go back to the transcribing.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. So you're going to send us the transcript this evening, right, Jeff?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? All right. Well, have a good rest of your week. And I'll see you guys all, some of you on Tuesday, one of you on Wednesday. Or no, I see Brian twice on Thursday. So I'll see you guys either on Tuesday or Thursday. All right?
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Sure.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.